From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll tell you about a collaboration among environmental groups that helps young people get on-the-job conservation experience.
Milwaukee uniquely is a place that has a lot of opportunity for youth to get into green and blue careers.
Then we'll tell you about Road America, a vintage racetrack that you can drive right here in Wisconsin.
It's called Road America because Cliff Tufte walked the land, and he wanted a racetrack that emulated road course racing, similar to racing around the village of Elkhart Lake.
Plus, we'll have the latest episode of Live at Lake Effect featuring singer-songwriter Paul Thorne. All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. There's an effort underway to get young people involved in environmental work. Those efforts have resulted in a variety of paid summer internships, some focused on green infrastructure, others land restoration or urban food production. The Environmental Protection Agency recently awarded a $500,000 grant to financially fuel collaboration among 13 organizations. The goal of the Milwaukee's Environmental Youth Collaborative is to expand and coordinate summer internship experiences, and they collectively employ more than 100 young people. WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz recently spoke to some members and interns of the collaborative.
There's 13 organizations that are folded into this collaborative, right?
Yes.
So talk a little bit about yours, Teens Grow Greens, and what some of what your program does, or your organization does.
Well, Teens Grow Greens is in its 10th year of offering high school students around the city different kinds of paid internships in culinary training, urban gardening, this year a city exploration internship, and then in the fall our entrepreneurship. But the EYC is really focused in on summer programming throughout the year. So this year was a really good opportunity for us to start to make some connections between our urban gardening programs and our new city exploration one, which hits all parts of the city, and start to partner up with these organizations. And as the years go on, I think the collaborations are going to become even stronger.
So, Nia, talk a bit about what Menominee Valley Partners does in terms of working with young people.
So we're in the fourth year of our Valley STEM internship. It's an internship where we have high school youth come to the Valley for the summer to rotate between engineering, architecture, and manufacturing firms in the Valley. And it's really about job shadowing and career exploration. So 1 week they could be at an architecture firm and kind of get to know what that's like in the day-to-day. And then the next they could be at a manufacturing plant where they're learning about that kind of work.
My name is Bryson Taylor. I'm a senior at Golden Meyer High School, and I'm an intern with Menominee Valley Partners.
This was your first summer. This is your first experience working with Menominee Valley Partners?
Yes, it is.
So how did you find each other?
A counselor at my school recommended it to me because she knew that I would be interested in the type of things that they were, in the opportunities that they were offering at Menominee Valley.
So what's one of the experiences that has stood out this summer?
Getting to meet up with different types of like engineering, architectural, just different like businesses in those types of fields. Personally, that's what I want to get into. So it was really nice getting to visit those different companies.
I'm Henry Argyropoulos, and I'm going to be a junior at Golden Meyer School. And I was an intern at Menominee Valley Program.
So tell me about your experience, if you would. Did you too find this through somebody at your school?
I actually went on a field trip to one of the companies in the Valley, and then I think after that I learned about the program and I applied, and then I eventually just got in.
Nia, as you've coordinated this program and you've been working on the collaborative, were you part of those early conversations of those organizations? And, you know, what was the motivating force to prepare young people to really know what all the possibilities are?
Yeah, all of the organizations, we recognize that Milwaukee uniquely is a place that has a lot of opportunity for youth to get into green and blue careers. And so a lot of us are doing similar work and we collaborate in our work, but our youth programs weren't always connected. What I've enjoyed most about this opportunity is to build trust and to be able to really foster relationships between us. So if there's ever an issue or a question, now I have so many more people to call upon to help solve problems. And that's also what we're trying to do with our youth, for them to see connections between different organizations.
So really watching grown-ups being able to be grown-ups.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. To answer that same question, I think what Nia said about they were kind of siloed, and that, you know, instead of, you know, like we're forming relationships and trust and collaboration instead of the competition that has just been necessitated by the fact that there's only there's a certain pool of money that we're all looking for as nonprofits of different sizes, and so that the collaborative funding model of like joining together as a group of 13 organizations doing similar work and asking funders to fund us collectively, and then deciding democratically as a group, as a collaborative, how to dispense that money and what the requirements for receiving that are. Like it's almost like you have community or collaborative agreements to participate in certain number of things, to offer certain number of things, to to be on committees, to create new kind of collaborative things that have never existed, like youth retreats, and to really improve this Green and Healthy Schools conference that we're at. It's really just afforded a way for us to do that as adults in the organizations, but then for the teens like Henry and Bryson to meet other people.
Were you aware of this collaborative, this alliance that is forming among groups, Menominee Valley Partners being one of them?
I wasn't aware of this collaboration until one Friday we went to, there was like a cookout. Some of the other groups were there and we got to meet all of them. We got to to find out what they do and stuff, and like how they relate to us while they're collaborating with us. And it was really nice.
So were these really generally organizations you didn't know about, or were there some that you were familiar with?
There was one that I did hear about. There was actually some members in there that I know from my school and outside of the school, so I kind of knew about some of them, but I didn't know that they had any relation to Menominee Valley until I met them there.
And how about you?
I don't think I knew much about it before the cookout, and I mean I met some people I knew out like from school from stuff at the cookout, and then I just talked to them a bunch and learned about it.
What do you find most interesting about the idea of pooling resources to a certain extent and working together?
I mean, I find it real interesting because like I haven't really heard about anything really like it before, and like I think it's a really good idea because like you can get into one program and then you learn about all the others. You can hop from them next to the next and just sort of get internship and experience and job experience through all your high school and maybe like pre-college summers.
How about you? Is there anything that's intriguing you from what you've learned thus far about the other groups?
I'm kind of interested in like environmental studies, like learning more about the environment, how I can protect it, what negatively affects it, stuff like that.
If I could ask you guys a question. I have learned, especially from all these other organizations, that like people really care about the world. And I'm wondering, like Henry and Bryson, like why do something like MVP, or why would anybody your age do the Teens Grow Greens and not something else during their summers?
Generally, I grew up like on like one side of Milwaukee, so usually I don't get to like explore like different sides. When I signed up for this internship, I got to do that. I got to see a different side of Milwaukee, and I started to like it a lot more. I didn't grow up here. I actually grew up in Texas, so it was nice getting to know the area, and I care about the environment, and I want to help it, and it feels nice to like be able to do something about it, to be able to help out the environment, you know?
I joined this internship because I'm interested in going into engineering, but I think I do care about the environment a lot. Like, my dad is an environmentalist. Like, he's following, like, Greta Thunberg and everything, and he, like, picks up stuff. He, like, he'll pick up stuff he finds on the street and everything, and he'll, like, donate to environmental funds. And I feel like that's rubbed off on me. Like, I try my best to pick up stuff when I see it. But, and I feel like as teenagers and young adults, I feel like we need to have a stake in the environment, because if we don't, then eventually it'll be gone and we won't really have an environment to exist in. So I think we need to act now rather than later.
So when you consider those young words of wisdom, what do you hope this collaborative can, you know, enhance your organization's ability to help lay those foundations, to give students the experience and inspiration?
Yeah, I think a lot of the feedback we hear from our interns is that after the internship, they have more of a stake in Milwaukee and wanting to stay here. And I think that's all we could ask for, is for people that are really invested in just making Milwaukee as great as it can be.
For Teens Grow Greens, you know, our work during the summer in urban gardens on the north and south side is very, like, labor intensive, and has always been labor intensive. And over the years, we've wanted to offer the teens a little bit more of the context of what they're doing. They're doing the work of food justice every time they put their hands in the soil, I like to say, but they don't know a lot about the greater context and what that's, why it is the way it is in Milwaukee. The food inequities, and you know, and as we have this new summer city internship, it's going to really just allow for, like I said before, like all these different connections with all the organizations around the city that are doing work that we can introduce our young people to, and you know, have them see like that greater context, and like, and bring it like, localize it, you know, because it's one thing to talk about climate change in the entire world, but it's affecting Milwaukee as well. And food justice is a part of climate change, and it's a part of food justice and environmental justice. So I think it's going to really give us in the coming years like a greater context, and kids a greater context as well.
Any final thoughts?
I mean, I guess I like to see people among my age group doing so much for the environment and stepping out of their bounds, like just like doing things that like adults would do, and they're like younger than me. I feel, for some reason, I feel like a proud dad. I don't know why, but I'm really proud of those kids.
Henry Argyropoulos and Bryson Taylor intern with the Menominee Valley Partners Summer STEM Internship Program. Dominic Inouye is the internship director at Teens Grow Greens, and Nia Smith is the project manager for public engagement at Menominee Valley Partners. They all spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter Susan Bentz about Milwaukee's Environmental Youth Collaborative. In about 20 minutes, we'll bring you music from country and blues singer Paul Thorne in our Live at Lake Effect series. But first, we'll tell you about Road America in Elkhart Lake and help you plan a trip there. That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Elkhart Lake is a popular destination for summer travelers. There are lots of reasons to visit, including its namesake lake and historic racetrack. It's called Road America, and it's much more than just a racetrack. It's hundreds of acres of entertainment that can be enjoyed by the most diehard car enthusiasts or people just looking for a good time. For this month's Wandering Wisconsin, Lake Effect's Becky Mortensen is joined by Amanda Weibel from Travel Wisconsin and John Everett from Road America to learn more about this travel destination.
Road America is iconically referred to as America's National Park of Speed. We are a 4-mile, 14-turn road course on 640 acres located just south of Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, and we've been in business since 1955. It's an incredible facility. Lots of history. We host about 10 major events a year, but about 500 events total. And what's impressive about that is that we can have 7 or 8 different events going on at one time. A lot of people think it's just racing, and that's not really the case. We have motorcycle schools, driving schools, disc golf. We have corporate events. We have community events. We have everything from family reunions to corporate outings to your basic race events. There's always something to see and do at Road America. You can camp here. We have families camping here for generations. And that's why it's also affectionately known as America's National Park of Speed, because if there isn't something going on track, you do feel like you're staying in a national park.
And this isn't just a place for spectators or car enthusiasts. People actually have the opportunity to get on the track themselves. Is that right?
Yes, it's very exciting. We have lots of wonderful opportunities. So if you can imagine, when you think about iconic facilities around Wisconsin, Lambeau Field or American Family Field, or even Camp Randall in Madison, it's very, very tough to probably get down on the field. Well, with Road America, you can actually get on the racetrack. We have sunset cruising. We have touring at a lot of our events where you pay a small fee and you can actually drive the track in your personal vehicle. But we find a lot of people, if they're excited about the facility, if they want to share family and friends or visitors and say, hey, you know what, we can go drive on Road America. A lot of people have never imagined doing that, and they can simply sign up for a sunset cruise, bring the entire family and drive the track at a low speed for 3 or 4 laps. Or if they want to go a little bit faster, sign up for one of our performance schools or driving schools. It's great. It's exciting. It's something different and unique for people to do. And not a lot of people can say that they can get down on the field at Lambeau Field during a game or American Family Field to watch a home run, or even a Camp Randall to watch their favorite college score a touchdown. But at Road America, you can.
So you mentioned there are clubs and schools as well. So what kind of things do you offer and how can people take part in those?
Lots of different types of clubs and schools have events here. Everything from karting to the Sports Car Club of America to Mustang clubs, Ford clubs. If you're a car aficionado, if you're an enthusiast or even a purist, you can find a club for you or a club event for you. But there's also schools. Our motorcycle school graduates the most amount of M-certified graduates in the state. So if you're interested in riding a motorcycle, learning to ride a motorcycle or school, we have an online course, and then you actually come and you get range time on brand new Yamaha motorcycles and scooters, which gives you the confidence and the courage to go out there on the roads, and you learn from certified instructors in a closed course environment. We also have driving schools from teen driving to winter driving and also performance driving. So a lot of kids are thinking about going back to school or going off to college. Parents are a little bit nervous about sending them out on their own. You can put them in our teen driving program and they can learn a lot more confidence behind the wheel, driving in all types of conditions in a closed course environment.
So this is clearly more than just a racetrack. There's 650 acres with all different kinds of things that you can do. So can you talk a little bit more about what else this place has to offer?
We truly love it when people come through the gates, because Road America was designed a little bit differently. If you think about American Family Field or Lambeau Field, you come in, you have a ticket, you're designated to a section or a seat. At Road America, that's not the case. You drive through the gates and you can move around our entire 650-acre property and find different viewing locations during some of our major events. You can peruse the paddock shop. You can camp. You can bring in your own coolers and pop-up tents, and you can move from one location to the other as far as viewing things on track. If you're not interested in viewing things on track, you don't have to be a race enthusiast. We have disc golf. We have go-karting. We have lots of things for families to see and do, such as our family fun zone during major events. There's also wood carvings where you can have sort of your own little scavenger hunt, so to speak, and find wood carvings all over the property. We have geocaching. We have lots of amazing concession stands. So if you think about your favorite foods from the state fair, or even from the county fair, or something that you've never tried before, we have 14 concession stands located throughout the property and clean, beautiful bathrooms within walking distance from some of our favorite locations. So that's what's really great too, is people don't have to travel very far to have a nice clean bathroom or to have some incredible food that they can bring back to their favorite lawn chair, sit under a shade tree, put their feet in green grass, and watch some world-class racing.
Well, that sounds nice. And the history of Road America is pretty interesting. So can you share some background on how the track got started?
Absolutely. It's an incredible story. Back in the early 50s, road racing was prominent in lots of areas of the United States because you had soldiers coming back from World War II and bringing high-performance vehicles back from Britain, such as Jaguars and MGs and BMWs and things of the like. So they were racing them on roadways in different parts of the country. That was banned in the early 50s. They raced them here in Elkhart Lake. There's a road course, a historical road course around Elkhart Lake that was from 1950 to 1952 until road racing was essentially banned. So Cliff Tufte, a civil engineer, got together with some local enthusiasts from the Sports Car Club of America and also the Chicago region and purchased about 525 acres of land outside of Elkhart Lake. These were several dairy farms that were linked together. Some of the stone walls that separated some of the pasture areas are still visible on the property and separate some of our camping areas. And it's called Road America because Cliff Tufte walked the land and he wanted a racetrack that emulated road course racing, similar to racing around the village of Elkhart Lake. So he walked the land, and wherever he put a stake in the ground, there was either a turn or a corner. And he also wanted it to mirror the natural topography. There was no grading, there was no leveling, there was no concerns about drainage or anything at that time. Road America was constructed. They raised shares as far as stocks go. We are publicly owned, but privately traded, much the same as the Packers. So he got shareholders involved, raised the funds, built the race course, and it opened up in September of 1955, and we've been going ever since. Interestingly enough, when Cliff walked the terrain and formed the 4-mile, 14-turn course, that course has not changed since Cliff walked the land. It is still the same width, it is still the same configuration, and drivers all over the world love it.
So I looked through your calendar of events, and there's stuff happening on the track almost every day in the summer, but you've got a vintage weekend coming up in September. What can you tell me about that event?
Road America is super excited with vintage because it gets us the chance to pay homage to our history as well. Every era of racing from pre-war, where you see vehicles from 1920s all the way up until the early 30s to post-war all the way up to modern day Formula One cars from the 90s will be on track. It's a very casual environment. Fans and children love it because they get to walk right up close and personal to the cars. Every car has a story. So you might see a car that Mario Andretti raced at Monaco back in the 70s. You might see a car that was raced in Formula One in the 90s. You might see a car that was raced at the Indianapolis 500 in the 50s. And that's what's really special. It is a photographer's dream with the colors changing on the trees and the green grass and these beautiful, bright, colorful cars that emulate every era of history of racing. And that's going to be coming up September 13th through the 15th at Road America. We have two bookend vintage events that start and end sort of our season, as well as one mid-July. So that's what's great about Road America, is because not only does our facility have the history from being founded in 1955 and every major racer has made a notch here, but now you get to see the cars that many of these legendary racers actually raced that are still racing. And that's really exciting for everybody to see.
So, Amanda, I'm going to turn to you. Elkhart Lake is a beautiful place to visit in the summer. And if people want to take a little break from the track, what are some other things you could do on a visit there?
There are so many things to see and do in the area. So whatever your interest is, you are going to find something special to enjoy. If you're seeking a little pampering after a day at the track, I suggest visiting Aspira Spa. It's at the Osthoff Resort, and you're going to find all kinds of services designed to improve your wellness. They've got massages, unique body treatments, yoga classes, and even a salt room to enjoy. But maybe you want to do a little more off-track cruising yourself and drive the Kettle Moraine Scenic Drive. It starts in Elkhart Lake and weaves through forests and countryside for 115 miles. It's a great leisurely road trip route, especially if you're coming from the Milwaukee area. And you'll want to be sure and stop at Parnell Tower for some really beautiful views, especially as those leaves start to change. It's going to be stunning. And then don't forget to enjoy the namesake lake. Elkhart Lake is one of Wisconsin's deepest and clearest lakes, so you're going to want to paddle, boat, fish, or maybe even just enjoy a great sunset over the lake from Fireman's Park.
So if people weren't able to secure a campsite or a cabin at Road America, where else could they stay in the area?
Elkhart Lake is known for its resort-style accommodations, and there are a lot of great ones to choose from. The Shore Club, Siebkens Resort, and the Osthoff Resort are all located next to each other on the lake. And at any of those, you're going to find really comfortable accommodations, great food, lots of fun for the overnight option. But they also all have their own unique draws and amenities. The Tiki Bar and Lounge, for example, is a popular option at the Shore Club. At the Osthoff Resort, I mentioned the spa, but you could also pursue your culinary passions at their on-site cooking school, which sounds so much fun. Or you might be charmed by the historic hotel at Siebkens Resort, in addition to their modern condo-style units.
And as John mentioned, there are some great food options at Road America, but could you share a couple other options for dining in Elkhart Lake?
Another great pit stop for food is the Stop Inn Tavern. True to the theme, the walls and ceiling are really just a mosaic of racing memorabilia, signs, stickers, and decor. You can enjoy lunch and dinner on the weekends, and you're going to find all of your favorite pub favorites. But you're also going to be surprised by some of the dishes on the menu, like their maple glazed carrots that incorporate locally produced goat cheese as well as maple syrup. And if you're looking for some upscale dining, you're going to want to check out the Paddock Club. They work with ingredients that are in season to prepare these amazing, fresh, mouth-watering dishes. And you can find small plates and starters like their mushroom risotto fritters, or maybe then you'll savor some fresh pasta or another well-crafted entree. And I love this. The Paddock Club even offers a three-course meal for the kids. So they might start with an item like the ranch-topped salad, then have chicken tenders for their main course, and top it all off with an ice cream sandwich.
All right, for both of you, Road America draws in close to 1 million people during the summer months, and I saw you've had a few celebrity visitors over the years. So, what do you think it is that draws so many people to this experience?
Without question, it really started with the village of Elkhart Lake and its very casual, quaint, and non-pretentious celebrities and various individuals of the like love the fact that they can walk down the streets and the shops and visit the various markets and stores and not be inundated with stares or autographs or things like that. Celebrities from Michael Jordan to Tim Allen, most recently Patrick Dempsey. Paul Newman actually filmed the movie Winning here in 1968. So it's really the area that we're very, very proud of. We work very, very closely with the Chamber of Commerce and also the other local businesses because we love the provenance of it and at the same time the unpretentiousness of it. So there's lots of things to see and do. Very, very exciting from golf to resorts, as Amanda mentioned, and also Road America. And it's a place where you immediately step outside and you're able to unwind, whether you want to be at Road America, driving, racing, enjoying it, or actually being in the village of Elkhart Lake. We like to say it's Wisconsin nice all wrapped into one. And that's why people love coming back here.
That's so well said. The appeal really is a little bit of everything that John has been talking about. The experience at Road America, it is centered around the track, but it's so much more than those 4 miles. There's this amazing camaraderie that you feel cheering with thousands of other fans. It's that true immersive experience that is so unique, getting that chance to view the cars up close and personal, to actually get to be on the track. And then all of the things to see and do outside of Road America in the Elkhart Lake area. I just absolutely agree with that too. And who would guess that such a massive attraction is outside of a town of just 941 people? I really think that just speaks to how unexpected Wisconsin is and all of the amazing experiences that you can discover in every corner.
Well, Amanda and John, thank you so much for joining me for Wandering Wisconsin.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
John Evert is the communications director for Road America, and Amanda Weibel is the communications officer for Travel Wisconsin. They both joined LakeFX Becky Mortensen for this month's Wandering Wisconsin. If you've driven through rural Wisconsin, chances are you've seen a barn quilt. They're large, square paintings hung on barns and can depict anything from flowers to patterns or even barns themselves. Caitlin Curtis and Laura Mason are part of a team who mapped out these barn quilts, along with Kathy Wilson, the executive director of the Racine Arts Council. They join Lake Effect's Joy Powers to explain more.
What are the origins of these barn quilts?
Well, it's very interesting. When I first heard about barn quilts, it was in Grundy County, Iowa, and it was back in about 2006, I think. And my mother and I were both quilters and photographers, and we had a quilt magazine. And so we were looking at these pictures of quilt on the barns. And at that time, I think they were in Indiana and people would just use them for sort of designs on their barns. And it sort of started to take off. So my mother and I went to Grundy County, Iowa to see what these quilt patterns on the barns look like. And they were phenomenal. And being an artist and a photographer, all we wanted to do was jump out of the car and take a photograph.
As we look at the landscape of Wisconsin today, how common are these barn quilts?
Well, that's another interesting question. We were the first ones in the state to create a Quilts on Barns project. Once we started our project, then other counties next to us started putting quilt patterns on barns. They're up in Door County, and now they're all over the state. But Racine County was the first place to have them.
So Parkside has become involved in this barn quilt project. Can you tell me a bit about it and what it hopes to do?
Sure. Well, Kathy reached out to us. The Quilts on Barns Trail has a road rally every fall, and they were hoping to create an online interactive map that users could find the barns more easily with. And so we spoke with her about her goals for the project. And with my background as an anthropologist, as well as a geographer, we talked about going a little bit deeper with it and really telling the stories behind the barns and their owners and the farming heritage of Racine County. So that's sort of what the project morphed into, like a story-driven narrative map of these barn quilts in Racine County.
What are some of these stories that you've learned so far?
Oh boy, there's so many of them. I think we were able to do a tour of some of the barns, which our photographer Laura Mason came on the tour with us. And we were able to see, a working barn that still has cows and, grain silos and things like that, which not all of them are still active barns. And, we were able to see this date stone from the 1800s, and this family has been continually farming for seven generations, and to just feel their pride in the continuation of that tradition was really amazing. And I think Kathy could talk more about Jean Jacobson, who also was one of the first barns on the trail.
Well, it was really interesting when we first started doing the project. Pat Levine and I went to all the barn owners and got lots of different information. And the barn owners were very interested in talking to us and telling us the story about different things. There's one barn that's actually on an Indian trail. And so they have a pattern on their barn called Indian Trail. Mm-hmm. And each barn owner had a story. Some of them still use their barn. Some of them don't use their barn. Some of them are just used for storage. Some of them still have agriculture going on in their barn, but they're all very, very proud of their barn. Mm-hmm. So to know that we were even thinking about putting this in our county was very exciting to them, because it gave new energy to them thinking about their barn and their neighbors. And it turned out that all the neighbors knew each other. All these farmers that are out in the county, they really do all know each other. They're all connected by all kinds of things, family stories, barn stories, agricultural stories. And so it just began, and it began to create this amazing excitement of not only, once again, the farms and the agriculture in Racine County, but then the families and the barns and everything else that goes on around that.
Well, and that gets to this larger ideological question that we're asking ourselves in the state. So many farmers in Wisconsin have been struggling over the last decade, especially as things are shifting inside of their industry. What does this barn quilt project mean as we look at the legacy of farmers in the state of Wisconsin?
I think one of the most interesting things I learned in this process was, how a lot of these barns were built in a different time in farming, mm-hmm. when, you know, you could just contain a few animals that you had, and that would be enough to sustain the farm. And now, since farming, in order to become, you know, a successful farmer in this sort of corporate industrial agricultural economy, you have to get big or get gone, is the thing we heard over and over again. Mm. And so some people told us that the barns, maybe some of them are no longer used for animals, and that actually leads to them just sort of degrading over time, because the animals sort of increase the humidity in the barn and keep the wood from disintegrating. But once it's no longer in active use, that's why, you know, this sort of this important heritage of farming that's represented in these barns is slowly sort of decaying in a lot of places, unfortunately. So I think the barn is a really important point of pride in that farming heritage.
I think it was interesting as well that some of our students who were on the field trip, this was their first experience actually on a farm, and yeah. getting to see the working equipment and how large it was, and being next to the animals. And so this was really their first real connection with a farm, and mm-hmm. being able to learn some of the stories behind it and what is involved with it, I think was interesting to them.
Yeah,
sure. Well, thank you all so much for joining us here on Lake Effect and sharing your work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Caitlin Curtis is an assistant professor of geography and anthropology at UW Parkside. Laura Mason is the creative services director at UW Parkside. And Kathy Wilson is the executive director of the Racine Arts Council. They joined Lake Effect's Joy Powers in 2022. We'll take one more break and then return with the latest Live at Lake Effect featuring singer-songwriter Paul Thorne. Keep listening to Milwaukee's NPR. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Live at Lake Effect is our music series featuring artists performing in the Lake Effect Surf Shop in Shorewood. We brought the Lake Effects together, along with Visionary Studios, to showcase local and nationally touring musicians. Today, we have singer-songwriter Paul Thorne. Born in Kenosha and raised in Mississippi, his musical style is a mix of blues, country, and southern rock. Here he is performing It's Never Too Late to Call.
This first song I'm going to sing, it was inspired by my sister Deborah, who passed away. I used to call her late at night after my shows, and she would always be awake. She was a night owl. This is for her. Some nights I get intoxicated to forget about what's wrong. If you feel like a sparrow who has fallen, you are not alone. When you're wearing concrete shoes at the bottom of a lake, and it feels like your heart can't take another break, just remember that I love you, and it's never too late to call. You say you have parts that are broken from your heart down to your soul, but I see a jewel in the gutter. To me you shine like gold. When you're wearing concrete shoes at the bottom of a lake, and it feels like your heart can't take another break, just remember that I love you, and it's never too late to call. When you can't turn off the voices in your head, My phone stays on the nightstand by my bed. When you're wearing concrete shoes at the bottom of a lake, and it feels like your heart can't take another break, just remember that I love you and it's never too late to call. No, it's never too late to call. Never too late to call. No, it's never too late to call.
This is Audrey Nowakowski from Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM Milwaukee's NPR. We're here at the Lake Effect Surf Shop in Shorewood, along with Milwaukee musician and Live at Lake Effect co-producer Trapper Shep. Hi, Trapper.
Hi, Audrey. We have the terrific Paul Thorne with us, storyteller, singer-songwriter, boxer. He is with us from Mississippi, correct?
Well, I've lived most of my life in Tupelo, Mississippi, but the truth is I was actually born in Kenosha.
No way.
I was born in Kenosha, yeah, and my dad was a preacher. And one of the things about being a preacher is the powers that be, they will make you transfer and go somewhere else. So we left when I was a baby, so I don't remember it. But I was technically born here, and I live in Tupelo now, yeah.
Your music does have so many elements of early folk and country blues. Does that, just come with the DNA of growing up in Tupelo, being, engrossed in such musical history with Elvis? And
yeah. Well, Tupelo is most famous because that's where Elvis was born. And believe it or not, I grew up in a lot of the same exact churches that Elvis attended. And I know so many old people that that knew Elvis and everything, and he was just a guy they went to school with. But yeah, the Pentecostal churches, going to the black churches, the white churches, and learning about the different types of, like at the black church, they sang rhythm and blues gospel. And at the white folks church, they had like country western gospel. So I got a really good training ground to learn about music just going to church.
The church music where I grew up, no offense, rural Wisconsin.
Not that
not that awesome. So yeah. That, you can hear that in my music, I guess. But
it has its place.
Place. It does.
You got the white gospel, the black gospel, and then cheesehead gospel.
I exactly.
I guess.
Cheesehead gospel. Well, and Paul, you mentioned your father.
With all due respect.
Yes. I mean, yeah, always respect for the cheeseheads. Yeah. You mentioned your father was a preacher, and we're talking about Pentecostal music and the churches that you went to, exposed to that. For you throughout your life, how has the church music stayed with you or influenced you?
Well, it stayed with me a lot. I'm no longer engulfed in the church like I was growing up, but I still have a lot of fond memories of it. And it was the main building block, of me learning how to play. Because, at 3 years old, I was standing in front of the congregation singing, I Saw the Light. So I wouldn't be doing this without the church experience, I don't think,
I noticed that when we shared the stage together many years back, that one of my big takeaways was, we did three shows, and with you, three shows were three completely different shows. You know what I mean? In terms of how you worked the crowd, how things came up so spontaneously, how you just reacted to everything in the room was so brilliant. And it reminded me of, people like John Prine or Todd Snyder. And yeah. I'm wondering, how did you begin to flex those sort of muscles, I guess?
Well, I got a lot of that from watching preachers, because preachers are there to give a message of hope and all that, but they're also got to be entertainers. Mm-hmm. Because if you're just dull and boring and you don't engage with the crowd and involve them, you will lose them. So I learned early on that involving the crowd as much as possible is the big secret.
Yeah, breaking down the fourth wall.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And it's funny you mentioned John Prine, he was a good, I was friends with John, and I got the privilege to open up for him like probably 50 times, and he actually helped me build my audience, and he was everything they said he was, and then some. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tell the story, but it's a good one. The first night I opened up for him, after the show, he invited me and the people that were sweeping the stage to his suite at the hotel to eat ice cream. And so I went to his hotel room, and I'm sitting there eating John Prine's ice cream.
What kind of ice cream?
It was Neapolitan.
Though. Okay.
And he doesn't eat anything but the strawberry.
That was my next question. He only eats
strawberry, but he won't buy just strawberry. He enjoys the task of getting the strawberry out.
Yeah.
And it keeps him in shape, you know.
Yeah.
That's his workout, you know. And but anyway, I was so excited that I got to eat ice cream with him. The next day I went on Facebook and made a post that said, "Hey, everybody, I got to hang out with John Prine and eat ice cream, blah, blah, blah." And I was so excited about it. And then his manager called my manager and said, "Take that down right now." And we said, "What's wrong?" And he said, "Well, John's got severe diabetes, and his wife is going to chew his over this." So I had to take the post down. Yeah, he was going to actually, I don't mean to keep name dropping, but he was actually going to sing with me on my last record. He agreed to do it. It was a duet song, and I was so excited about it. And then he selfishly died.
Yeah, how dare he? How dare
he's always thinking of himself.
Rest in peace, John Prine.
Yeah, rest.
Yeah.
Rest.
So, speaking of...
But he wouldn't be offended by me saying
that.
No, I don't think he would.
He had a sense of humor, man.
He's goofy.
Yeah, he was.
One of the many things he was known for. So, you mentioned learning from entertainers, but you had some roles in your life that were entertainment roles, too, including being a boxer. So... are there any similarities between the life in the ring as a boxer and being on stage as a musician?
Well, they're completely different to me because for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons is when I go on stage, I'm not feeling fear. But I had 50 fights, and I never went into the ring when I wasn't scared. Any boxer that's honest will tell you the same thing, you know.
Well, some level of... stage fright and
always.
Anxiety is okay, you know.
I feel a little bit of butterflies before I play music, but there's nothing more terrifying than walking down an aisle when you got your entourage with you and they're all patting you on the back saying, we can do it. And you look back and you go, "We?" And then when you get in the ring, guess what? They all get out of the ring.
Yeah.
And then you're standing there, and there's another guy over there who's worked for 3 months figuring out how to beat you up, and you got to go face that, you know? And that's fear that's I can't even describe. I think everybody right out of high school ought to have one boxing.
There you go.
When did you get into boxing?
Was that?
When did you get into boxing?
When I was about 12 years old, my uncle was a former boxer, and he started training me. And started out just as a hobby, but then it turns out I had a talent for it, and I got pretty good. And you guys are a different generation. You probably won't even know who this is, but in 1988, I fought one of the greatest fighters who ever lived, Roberto Duran. And after 6 rounds, they stopped the fight because I had a bad cut and I couldn't see. But, you know, I got some punches in, and, you know, out of 50 fights, I lost 7 times. You know, I wasn't the best, but I was very good.
Do you find yourself taking a certain physical stance to get into being a musician? Because I feel like your boxing training, it's obvious it stays with you, the way you walk in, your cadence, the way you move. How do you get in the zone before doing a show?
My pre-show ritual is I go in the bathroom and I make sure there's no chicken strips in my teeth. And make sure I got my pants zipped up and no
That's
noticeable
key.
Stains on my shirt. And everybody gets to a certain place doing a certain thing. And my thing is, you know, right before show, if I'm not ready now, I ain't going to ever get ready.
So I know.
You know. And so I just, you know, it's like I always say, don't get in shape, stay in shape. You know what I mean? I try to stay in shape. Because if you got to get in shape, that means you ain't in shape.
Well said. Well, that work ethic was clear in the songs you just performed for us today. So, Paul, thank you so much for joining us here.
Hey, thank y'all for having me.
Thank you, Paul Thorn.
Yeah, good luck with everything y'all are trying to do, whatever it may be.
Exactly.
All right.
That was Paul Thorn joining us for Live at Lake Effect. Be sure to head to WUWM.com and our YouTube page to see him performing three original songs in the Lake Effect Surf Shop. Milwaukee musician Trapper Shep and myself are the executive producers of Live at Lake Effect. Sound engineering is done by WUWM's Jason Reedy. And thanks to our friends at Visionary Studios, a local advertising agency, for filming and editing this episode. New episodes of Live at Lake Effect are released monthly, and be sure to catch up on our past episodes featuring the Cactus Blossoms, Willie Carlisle, Buffalo Nickels, Raina, and so much more. That's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of today's conversations or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, simply download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll tell you what's in the Milwaukee Rec Fall Activity Guide, and we'll talk to the president of MIAD as he gets ready to celebrate 10 years on the job. That's tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Come here, story. There's not many things that escape my memory. Tell me where was I when you stopped loving me?